comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. To all of our listeners,
I'd just like to confirm that this is a very good morning, a very good afternoon, and a very good evening.
It is. As my son pointed out, perhaps we shouldn't be doing Talking the Blues because we win when we don't do them. I think he was only joking, but answers on the postcard. Okay, so I think since the last time that we did Talking the Blues, and apologies to everybody who has missed them, for various reasons we weren't able to do them, mainly down to me as against anybody else, but there we go. We've embarked on a bit of a run.
I'll say four straight wins in the league, no goals conceded. First time Jordan Pickford's had four clean sheets on the trot in the Premier League. It's just it's just bizarre, really, that what's happened. The 10-point deduction has completely re-energised Everton Football Club on the field and in the stands. It might not have energised the club away from the actual match day experience, but at the end of the day, we are football fans, and our football team is finding results and finding performances and finding togetherness and conviction and belief. And I haven't felt this way for a long time watching Everton. We've all said it over the years that there's been times when you've either gone to a game or you've turned it on the telly and whatnot, and you've kind of watched it through fingers or from round the back of the sofa because you just dread what you're going to watch. Now it's everybody has got the I want to go to the match feeling again. I want to watch. I want to see our team because we're good. We're not great, but we're good. And good is good enough right now. You know, the players are playing for one another. They're playing for the manager. They're playing for the fans. They're playing for the shirt. And that's something that so many players over so many years haven't done. They haven't played for themselves. They haven't played for their teammates. They haven't played for various managers. And they sure as hell haven't played for the fans at times. And they've disrespected the badge on the shirt. And right now, the squad that Sean Dyche has got, every single one of them is on the same page. And it's all about getting a result for Everton Football Club and those fans who are travelling around the country. It's just, it's given everyone a tremendous lift, you know. And in these troubled times away from football, you know, people need something to grasp onto and hang on to and have belief in. And Everton, thankfully, are now giving every single Evertonian that's something to hang on to. And long may it continue.
Tuesday night.
Yes.
Well said, Andy. Well said.
Yes, quite.
Thank you. It does. We're getting pride back in our club, and it's the pride in being a Blue, the pride in being an Evertonian, is something that's been missing. It's been there in dribs and drabs over the last few years. But now it's come back like a tsunami. People said, Sean Dyche, not sure. But the man has taken on the mantle of Everton Football Club. And I mean, I don't know what it is about him. He sometimes when he talks, you think hang on a minute, this is just media talk. He's switched into media mode and he's just saying what they want to hear. And other times you think he just keeps it so damn simple. And the players clearly buy into simplicity. And I'm not saying anyone, you know, I don't want that to sound come out the way it sounded or sound the way it came out. But if you keep things simple, there's less chance of people getting confused and making mistakes. And I think we saw that today. The game plan was simple. He decided to go with a back five with McNeil dropping back to cover the absence of Mikalenko and allowing Keane and Tarkowski to play in the middle with Godfrey to support, you know, Patterson. And it worked an absolute treat. You know, Pickford had one save to make all game from the shot late on from Andouni that he went full length to turn up. He's never had an easier game for Everton Football Club because the defence in front of him knew exactly what they were doing because they'd been given simple instructions and they followed it to a letter. You know, when your defence is as solid as that was today, then your midfield can be more productive. And they were. You know, I felt a bit sorry for DCL because he got isolated, obviously, up front. But he put his shift in. You know, he worked hard. And Burnley, you know, were no great shakes. But we didn't allow them to impose, we didn't allow them any chance to impose themselves on the game on their own pitch in front of their own fans.
George, I don't know if you want to come in at this stage.
No, I'm happy. I'm enjoying listening to all this. It's great.
I have to say, I think the first half was the best out of possession performance I have seen from an Everton team for years and years and years.
Yeah.
You know, and I made that differentiation. I don't think we're that great a team when we're in possession of the ball itself. Although, you know, even today we strung a few passes together at times, and you know, Dyche's philosophy of direct football, i.e., getting the ball forward as quickly as possible, not just lumping it, but getting the ball in a controlled manner forward as quickly as possible, is great. But we didn't give, especially the first half, particularly the first half, we didn't give Burnley an inch. We didn't give them a second on that. When they had the ball and they were trying to play out from the back, which is clearly the manner in which they wanted to play. And frankly, they're not a good enough team. They don't have good enough individuals to play that game. But particularly against a side like Everton, who just pressed and pressed and pressed. And as I say, I think that was the best out of possession performance I've seen from an Everton team for years. It sort of took me back to, it was almost like a bit of a Moyes performance at times. And even before that, sort of, you could almost go back to one of the things that, you know, about Kendall's sides in the 80s was, and it's not, wasn't recognised particularly at that time because it wasn't called the pressing game. But we used to press like mad. We never ever gave the opposition time on the ball.
No. Nope.
And you think, you know, the numerous performances in the last few years where, frankly, the opposition have had all the time in the world to do what they wanted to do with the ball. Not today. I don't hate a relatively poor Burnley side who weren't playing to any strengths that they may have. But we, first half, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic from my perspective.
I'd agree completely with that. Completely. I mean, I thought we were a lot more passive in the second half. In fact, I put it in the match report on Grand Old Team that maybe they felt that the 2-0 lead was enough. And maybe they were already thinking, you know, a little bit about Tuesday night. But then again, when Burnley did try to, you know, put us under a little bit of pressure, we weathered it perfectly well and then got back to the pressing game. I think it's a tremendous performance today. You know, like to Burnley were poor, so you can only beat what's in front of you. But it was the thing that got me was the togetherness again about the squad. I mean, when he brought Lewis Dobbin on at half time, I mean, Lewis Dobbin is a little live wire, forward. And yet he just settled into the midfield, wide right, and did his job. Carried the ball when he could, you know. I mean, there was a couple of times when he had the ball and he was going forward and, you know, he was running into a bit of a blind alley, so he checked back and, you know, he didn't lose possession. That was the impressive thing. You know, there's a young lad who scored against Chelsea and was probably cock-a-hoop, and he's getting the whole second half with Decore having a bit of a strain. And he didn't get carried away. He settled into the job that he was given. He'd obviously been given some instruction in the dressing room, and he'd taken it all on board and played out his part in that team performance excellently. And I think it was a complete team performance from front to back.
Is that what's wrong with Decore? It was the strain.
I'm not sure, bro, but they said it was definitely it wasn't tactical. It was definitely because of something that, you know, a knock he'd taken or whatever. So over to precaution, because, you know, I think Deitch was probably thinking, right, okay, let's give Lewis a run and we'll save Decore and try and get him ready for Tuesday night.
And what's the news on Mikalenko for Tuesday night?
I think Mikalenko will be ready for Tuesday night.
You do?
I hope so, yeah.
Well, I hope so, Andy, that you've said, which I don't disagree, you know, the only bit I disagree with was that I thought the game was a perfect illustration of why you have specialist fullbacks. Because Tarkowski and McNeil between them got opened up so many times. A much more clinical team than Burnley could have caused havoc down the right-hand side. And it was fascinating to see that without Mikalenko, we were very, very vulnerable on that. You know, it goes back to the thing that the squad is so thin that you've only got one player who can kick it with his left foot, for God's sake. You know, have we not got another left back? Is there nobody in the whole squad who can, you know, presumably if he hadn't been suspended or injured, Ashley Young would have been there.
I would guess so, yeah. Young was injured.
And might well be there on Tuesday night. Well,
If Mikalenko's not fit, I would suspect that they've been precautious with Mikalenko, and Mikalenko will play on Tuesday.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so, because it was quite sharp how often they got behind us on that side. But anyway, I mean, in the four matches that we haven't covered, or we haven't talked about them. Have you got your bleep machine ready, Paul? My favourite moment of what we've not talked about was Beto's goal against Newcastle.
Right.
Patson's ball was gorgeous. And then Beto runs onto it, and that guy comes across to tackle him, and Beto goes, oh, fuck off, out of it. And just slams it under the goalie's leg. I was so thrilled for him. And Dobbin's goal against Chelsea nearly made me cry. That was just brilliant. And today, I thought, as we were pressing in the second half, I thought, I know what's going to happen here. Ben Godfrey's going to score his first goal for the club. But not quite.
Not quite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, having said that, he did what he was employed to do and defend that clearance late in the first half when Tarkowski got caught flat-footed and the ball came across the penalty area and Godfrey got back with a brilliant clearance. Superb. It's weird because prior to the game, you know, particularly when the team was announced and Keane and Godfrey were included in the starting 11. And there was all sorts on social media and forums about, oh my God, Godfrey and Keane. And yet they both played really, really well.
They did.
you know, Godfrey did what he had to do. Keane did what he had to do and scored.
He's a really good shooter. I'm not sure he's not the best shooter in the club, actually.
Well, when you think his first shot was almost instantaneous, wasn't it, from the header, you know, there was no control.
Really, really crisp.
Yeah.
And the second one was cool as you like.
Well, yeah, exactly. A nice, calm side foot, you know, no need to lash it in. He knew what he was doing. And I was pleased for Michael Keane because he's had so much crap from so many fans. So for him to play as well as he did, and he would have wanted to play well, you know, against his old club with his old manager and everything. I was very, very pleased for Michael Keane today. You know, he played well, as did Godfrey, as did everybody else. Everybody put a shift in. Nobody shirked anything. As I said before, for me, I thought it was an excellent Everton team performance.
What's fascinating watching those four games, and because we haven't talked about them, so you're kind of storing up thoughts as you go along, is the change that's come over Garner.
James Garner.
Who has suddenly, over these four or five games, has gone, oh, I can tackle, can't I? And he's really getting stuck in. So the midfield has got much more bite in it than it had 3 months ago at the start of the season. And he's, I was impressed with him. I thought he played really well today. And you're right, so did everybody else. And it's obvious that the team can't wait to get back on the pitch. And Fulham shipped three goals today, so that's nice. And does that centre forward they had who got sent off, does he still get to play on Tuesday?
No, he doesn't because he got a straight red.
Oh, brilliant. He can't play.
If it had been two yellows, he would have been eligible to play, but it's a straight red, so he misses the Carabao Cup game.
Hurrah! The platypus will be back.
Yes,
hello, sure Alex.
He'll get a nice warm welcome.
He will get a warm welcome.
I'm sure he will. No, I was meaning that seriously, not joking.
No, me too, Andy. And I'm almost looking forward to the warmth of the reception that Richarlison is going to get on the Saturday.
Well, that's at Spurs. It's not at Goodison.
Oh, right.
That's a White Hart Lane.
Oh, then we'll beat him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all joking aside, there won't be many sides actually now who are thinking, or looking forward to playing Everton. You know, the soft touch Everton of 12 months ago has been largely eradicated.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think anyone will relish playing Everton at the moment. Then everyone will know they're in for a physical game and they're in for a battle. And you know, I mean, the thing that stands out is the fitness.
Yeah.
Whatever Dyche and his coaching staff have done, they've turned this squad into, I'm not sure, quite sure what the right words are, but I'm not seeing any signs of tiredness, and the games are coming thick and fast.
They're winning, Andy. They're winning.
Yeah.
It's a different.
I suppose when you're winning all the games.
Even at the silly level that we played football, if you're winning, you can't wait to get back out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with those comments, George. I think to be fair to the coaching squad and the trainers, I think it's more than that though. I think the fact that, you know, two players came in today, and I know Godfrey's a very, very good athlete, but Godfrey and Keane came in, they've not played a lot of football, certainly not played a lot of first team football.
No.
Yeah. They didn't look rusty. They weren't blowing in the second half, which you might have expected. I thought that showed that the squad itself, you know, across the whole squad, is much, much fitter. not just the first 11. And in fact, didn't Dyche say something in the week about the role of the players outside of the first 11?
Yes, he did. Yeah, he was very interesting on all that.
And it was evidenced by the performance today, wasn't it? The performance today backed up those words that he said about, you know, this is a squad game, even though our squad is not necessarily the strongest squad overall. Two players came in, not played a lot, played well. As you said earlier, Andy, you know, a great goal-saving challenge by Godfrey. But they didn't. The most important thing was that they didn't look like they were players who hadn't played.
No, they slotted in seamlessly.
They slotted into the system and they looked as fit as anybody else on the pitch.
But the system is not one we played. We haven't played five at the back for ages. That was impressive too.
Well, yeah, I mean, haven't we often, and others have often said, you know, Dyche has really only got one way of playing. Well, there's another myth that's gone out the window.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's proving himself to be a really interesting manager, is Sean Dyche.
You know, I think his psychology is really interesting. I think, you know, what in the short period that we've not been doing the podcast since the 10-point penalty, he's turned around and said, you know, we've just got to concentrate on the football. The players have just got to concentrate on the football, and that's been, like, you know, the public message that they haven't really been thinking about other things. But I suspect that the 10-point penalty has been a big part of his message to the players, even if he's not saying that publicly. And it's become a big internal motivation driven by him. But he's not letting anybody know that may be one of the motivations. And I think that's really clever management.
Yeah, I think he seems to be, or maybe he's talking about the injustice and to the club, and to not just the club, but the injustice to those players, that they are being punished for something that's absolutely nothing to do with them, and he's using that as a motivation that, in effect, you know, let's just show that, you know, they can do what they want, we'll rise above it.
Absolutely.
And the players have bought into it big time.
Yeah. Just in the same way that the fans have bought into the idea that they're the victims here. They're not responsible for what's happened. They're not responsible for the decision the Premier League made. Mm. Yet they're suffering the indignity of a 10-point penalty. And, you know, potentially it might have meant for the club had this amazing turnaround in form not happened. It seems to have, even though we haven't publicly acknowledged it as a football team, or Dyche hasn't publicly acknowledged it as a manager, it just seems to have invigorated and encouraged and motivated everybody.
It's galvanized, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's galvanized the galvanized, fan base, yeah, the players.
Yeah. Yeah.
The management, the coaching staff, everyone's aggrieved about it, but rather than whining about it, they've just got on with the work, and the hard work is paying dividends.
Yeah, the Premier League have achieved something that nobody at Everton has achieved for years.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true, isn't it? I mean, there's a clarity about. There's a clarity about our position, and Dyche is the type of person that says, okay, this is the situation that we're in. What do we need to do? Well, we need to win games, and we can only win one. You know, it's a cliche, but we can only win one game at a time. So we'll look at each game individually. We'll do whatever we need to do to win that game, and we'll do our best, and we'll prepare our best, and we'll, like today, maybe tactically different because of different personnel and because we were playing Burnley away, blah, 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 blah. And it's all working.
Yeah.
Fabulous, isn't it?
It's leadership. It's leadership. It's direction. It's purpose, or purposeful, sorry. And it's what Everton Football Club have needed for years and years and years.
Yeah,
100%.
And the one thing that Evertonians always say, much as we'd like to see School of Science football week in, week out, the one thing we always demand is that whoever crosses that white line in a blue shirt gives their all, works hard.
Yeah.
And right at the minute, we're getting hard work in abundance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from that hard work, you know, it might not come soon, but I think we will get back to School of Science at some point, because of the hard work is the discipline that will rule everything.
Well, this is not the most talented bunch of players that we've had at Everton Football Club in Mashiri's reign. Not by a long stretch. We've had many, many more talented players, and it's not denigrating the players who are currently playing for us, but it's a fact. We've had much more talented players come into Everton Football Club, and most of them have since left and not performed. Deitch has got a group of players together who probably suit his character, probably respond well to the type of character that he is, to his management style, etc. And it's working, and that's the beauty of it.
Mm. Yeah. That's exactly, you know, football's a really simple game, and you've just summed it up. That's exactly what's going on. The squad and the management and the trainers are a team.
Mm.
And they are very, very clear and united in their purpose. And the replacements know exactly what they're doing. So bring on Fulham and bugger off Marco. It is one leg, isn't it? Is this the quarter final on Tuesday?
Quarter final, yeah.
Quarter final, right. Yeah.
Right. Beat them, then go and deal with Spurs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then is it City after that?
And then it's City on the 27th, yeah.
Well, they're just wobbling away like billio, aren't they? They're just like a mince pie waiting to be eaten.
Crumbling around the edges, George.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It couldn't be, I mean, who knows what's going to happen on the 27th, but there couldn't be a better time for Everton to play Manchester City.
No.
Just after Christmas, crowd will be up for it. We seem to be in a great frame of mind. They seem to be vulnerable.
Mm.
What a way to see the year off.
Yeah, time for a DCL hat trick.
Yeah. And you know, the irony of it is, I was talking to somebody a couple of days ago about other stuff relating to Everton, is that this has been like the most chaotic year of Everton's existence ever.
Yeah.
In every sense. And yet out of the chaos, out of the confusion, out of the lack of strategy, the lack of resource, the lack of planning, whatever, lack of competitiveness. We've got a group of players and we've got a manager and no doubt his backroom staff who've molded themselves into something that's become supremely competitive and is producing results, which is, at the end of the day, all that you can ask for.
Yeah. Yeah, out of the chaos, a phoenix has arisen.
Yeah, and you know, frankly, I don't care. It'd be great if the School of Science came back.
Mm.
But I don't care. I don't care if it doesn't at this stage.
No.
Because I think I enjoyed, and I've enjoyed elements of Everton's performances in recent weeks more than I have done for many, many years. Certainly the first half today, I enjoyed more than almost anything I've seen.
I think that is the hard work ethic, because people can truly relate to that. You know, we all go to our jobs and we all work hard, you know, and for our shilling and what have you. And I think we're seeing that in the players now, that you know, that they've they, if you like, they're honouring the working class backgrounds of football by grafting themselves stupid. And it's not through luck that they're getting results. It is the fruit of hard work and dedication, and you know, and as well as commitment to the cause.
Right, it's time for a cold shower, everybody.
Well, given that Andy just sort of spattered some form of Marxist theory at us with regards to the fruits of our labour and everything else, which is excellent, Andy. Well done. The thing I enjoyed, and I was just thinking about it whilst we've been talking, because none of this is ever planned, obviously, is that we're seeing Everton do to teams what they've been doing to us for years, and that's what makes it so special, actually, that the boot is on the other foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've seen lesser teams come to Goodison, or Everton have visited lesser teams, and we've been not necessarily played off the park, but we've been competed off the park week in, week out for years and years and years. Not every week, yeah, but more often than not. And at the moment, and long may it continue, we're doing exactly that to other teams, some of whom may be lesser than us, some of whom may be greater than us, but it doesn't matter at this moment in time. We're a match for anybody.
Before I come to the cold shower bit,
do you have to?
Yeah, the best bit of this little run was the fact that against Chelsea, who looked like, you know, you watch Chelsea, you thought, why are they? What's going on here? Okay. You thought, why is this team struggling? They can really play. They played some lovely football. And what was so great about that game as an Everton supporter was you sat there going, they're never going to score, this lot. They're not going to score. They're not good enough. They're not hard enough. They're not violent enough. They're not dangerous enough. They're not committed enough to get past this back four of ours. And I stopped watching the clock, and Dobbin's goal was like, look at that cherry on that cake. It was gorgeous. Now, the cold shower is, here we come towards the January transfer window. In what way can Everton resist when the likes of Chelsea, who seem to think they're in enormous trouble, and Manchester United, and all the clubs who've got loads of handbag, go, right, we'll have Onana and or Pickford, definitely Branthwaite, and we might like the centre forward as well. How can Everton resist that? And can they, fiscally? Can we?
Good question. Very, very good question, George. The hesitation in saying yes sort of gives away the answer, really, doesn't it? Because an awful lot's going to happen between now and the end of January with regards to Everton's future off the pitch. It's either going to be...
Can any of it safeguard this squad of players? Because that's the basis of what I'm talking about.
Well, assuming that Everton find a way of being able to finance itself between now and the end of the season, there's no reason to sell any... Let's be positive, okay?
Yeah.
Assuming that we find a way of financing, because... Even with what 777 has said, 777 has said, we've got financing through till the end of January. But let's assume one way or another we find a way of financing ourselves through February, March, April, into May. So four/five months beyond that. There's no reason for us to sell any players.
Right.
We're not under any pressure from profitability and sustainability. We haven't, and you know, given that we're in such a positive mood tonight, we haven't broken the profitability and sustainability rules for the following year after, you know, the 21-22. So with the financial results that we're going to drop, rather with the financial results from last year and the previous 2 years, we're compliant. We're not above the 105 million. So, and given the results that we're about to publish, we're okay. So we don't need to sell players as long as we can find a way of just financing the club between now and the summer.
Right.
But that's the big difficulty. How do we do that? Because the
in saying that, Paul, are you including in the financing of the club from now till the end of the season the money that's needed to keep Bramley Moor Dock going?
Yeah, because it's absolutely essential that we maintain our payment schedule
right. With
Langer Rock, because if we don't, the way the contract is written is we would get very punitive clauses coming in, which would massively increase the cost to Langer, well, the amounts that we would have to pay to Langer Rock.
Right.
So we can't afford not to make those payments. So
right.
The fact that we're currently spending approximately £20 million a month more than we're earning, that continues, and that will continue until the end of the season. So we have to find a way of funding that.
Wow.
And it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be through 777, 777, because I think between now and the end of January, that deal is going to collapse. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because either the Premier League or the Financial Conduct Authority say that they're not fit and proper.
All right.
But that only solves half of the problem if you believe that not having 777 is a solution, which obviously I do believe, because I think they're a major problem if they were to get ownership. We still have to solve the problem of how do we fund between January and May or June. And
so circa another 80 to 100 million pounds just to see us through to the end of the season and keep the stadium project alive.
Yeah. Now the temptation would be, and the obvious answer is, well, you sell Onana for 80 million pounds if he's worth 80 million pounds, or you sell Branthwaite and another for 80 million pounds, and you sort of solve the problem. I'm hoping that we don't go down that route. And as I say, providing we can find a way of financing it, we don't need to sell for profitability and sustainability purposes. Cash flow is a different issue.
The other thing, of course, in when we're talking about whether there would be any need to sell players, is what we would want for them and what we would get might be two completely different things, because any suitors for the likes of Pickford, Branthwaite, DCL, Onana, and anybody else for that matter, you know, they'll see Everton's valuation of X and think, sod that, we'll give you X minus. And they'll just try and chivvy us down.
Yeah.
Because they'll think that we're desperate. They might know that we're desperate. And so they're not gonna cave in and give us what we want for those players.
No, that's business, isn't it?
Well, it is business, yeah. And I suppose if the boot were on the other foot and it was Chelsea that was struggling and we wanted to sign Mudrick or anybody else in that squad, we'd do exactly the same. You know, how much do you want for him? Yeah, right, well, jog on, because you ain't getting it from us.
Yeah, well, that's what United have complained about for centuries, isn't it? That if United want a player, they just bump the price up because so that's just the way the world goes round.
Yeah,
just got to hope that we don't have to sell, because you know it's the team and the squad that is pulling us out of this mess. And fear that if it was broken up because of mismanagement above it, that would I fear that that would be a big seismic shock through the club when the club is clearly rehabilitating itself and beginning to like itself and trust itself again.
Well, certainly from the stands to the players and the manager, yeah. I mean, we don't know about the internal.
That is what I mean by the club, right. Andy.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've talked for years, haven't we, about the club being leaderless,
yeah. rudderless,
and you know, without any form of leadership. Even though it had personnel in leadership positions, now we're rudderless, leadershipless, whatever. But and we don't have the people in any of those positions.
We're doing better.
Well, I don't think we are doing better off the pitch. I think we're in a desperate position off the pitch. If truth be known, you know, the article that I wrote this week in the bleak midwinter sort of explains why I believe that to be the case, and that, you know, today's performance doesn't alter any of that. That's still the case. We need to find a solution. It's not 777, and we need to find it pretty much in the next few weeks. And if anybody wants to ask me what the solution is, it's not very obvious what the solution is, other than finding a new backup. And can you do that in 4 weeks or 6 weeks, where we are currently, 2 weeks of which is Christmas and New Year? It's going to be really difficult. But there are people out there trying to do it, and there are people out there with an interest in not necessarily saving Everton just for the sake of saving Everton, but with an interest in investing in Everton because they see that there's perhaps some value at this point when things are desperately bad for the club off the pitch.
Right.
People see some value.
But isn't the problem that the current owner seems to have put all his eggs in the 777 basket?
Well, he has, but I think there has to come a point where there has to be an adult in the room, and the adult in the room turns round to all of those people who are owed money by Everton Football Club, and those who are yet to be paid for services either rendered or about to be rendered, i.e. Langer Rourke, and say, you have a choice. You can take the club into administration, and you can fight with the administrator as to how much of whatever Everton is worth and has in terms of assets you get, what your share is. So you're arguing about reducing your losses, because nobody wins in administration. Or you can cut the club some slack and say, whilst maybe perhaps it doesn't deserve it, our interests as creditors are better served by giving you another 6 months in which you can try and trade your way out of, or find a more appropriate buyer in order to A, solve the club's problems, and B, solve the creditors' problems. Because we are at the point, and I don't think many people realize this, we are at the point whereby it's now no longer just Everton's problem. It is actually the creditors' problem as much as it is Everton. And anybody who's not of a financial background who's listening to this, the creditors are the people to whom Everton owe money. So the people that have lent Everton money expecting it to be paid back at some point, they now have problems, because if we go into administration, it's not obvious that they get everything back that they've lent. And the same with Langer Rourke, even notwithstanding what I just said 5 minutes ago about having to make regular payments to them, there might come a point where Langer Rourke realise that they've got to renegotiate, or they've got to allow some more flexibility in order to get Everton to the point where they're assured of getting whatever's due to them. Because I would say, if I sat on the board of Langer Rourke at this moment in time, I would be saying, I'm not exactly sure that we're going to get everything that's owed to us if we go down the route that we're going down. So this is where I say that there has to be, well, first of all, there has to be an adult in the room at Everton who can turn round to MSP, can turn round to Rights and Media Funding, can turn around to 777, because you know we now owe 777 100 million pounds, and can turn around to Langer Rourke and say, you've got a choice. You can take us into administration, fine, but then you're all fighting each other for whatever resources are available, or you can help us. And if you help us, like you've supported us in the past, we might just get to the point in the summer, because there might be a new owner that isn't here yet, who can solve all of our problems. What is it that you want to do? Why is it that you need, if you're talking to the creditors, why is it that you need at this particular moment in time to take Everton into administration? You need to give us some more time, and we will act responsibly. We'll bring different, maybe we'll bring different people in to see us through this period. Maybe a George Downing or an Andy Bell takes a higher profile and a greater management role than Fahad Moshiri, because Fahad Moshiri is still calling all the shots.
Right.
And maybe he has to stand aside, and maybe he has to give up his so-called leadership position and allow other people who are better qualified and perhaps have better ideas and are better able to execute a plan that sees us through the next few months, because that's what we need. And there's no point in sugarcoating it and saying, oh, we'll be okay. Because unless somebody does something different from what is currently planned or not planned, then that's what's going to happen to the football club.
Right.
And we are going to get the 9-point deduction, and we are going to fight, be fighting a 19-point deduction. Possibly we'll get some of those 10 points, or, we deserve to get all of those 10 points back.
Yeah.
But we can't say that for sure. So who is going to be the adult in the room that takes on board this challenge? Not Fahad Moshiri, who's acting totally irresponsibly. And has acted irresponsibly, not only during the period when he was giving the club lots of money, but particularly in this period where he's giving the club no money. Somebody has to come along and just take control of the situation and work out something that keeps the club in business and at the same time gives the creditors a pathway that they can achieve what they want to achieve going forwards. But it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in the next 6 weeks.
It sounds like we need an administrator without going into administration.
Father Christmas.
Well, in a sense, yes, Andy, we need somebody to be acting like an administrator would act.
Yeah.
Not that's what I mean, because
if we go into administration, the administrators work to get the best deal they can for everybody involved.
Well, for the creditors.
That's what we need right now without actually going into administration.
Yeah.
Like we need an independent overseer to say, right, you do this, you do that, and you do that. And rather than the cockamamie situation we're in at the minute, where nobody quite knows who's doing what and who is getting any benefit from anything. We're just bumbling along from one day to the next, so it appears. And as you've highlighted, Paul, potentially, if we don't come up with any more investment or financial support by the end of January, February time, the worst thing that could happen in terms of administration and another automatic 9-point deduction.
Well,
then all the uncertainty of administration.
Yeah. Let's recall that in January last year, or January this year, sorry, it seems like last year, but it was this year, when Moshiri was talking to the Fan Advisory Board, when he was talking to Jas Bahl, he talked about the existential crisis that, Everton might face. Yet he's done nothing to take us out of that situation?
That's dereliction of duty for the major shareholder, surely.
Well, as a shareholder, you know, he doesn't really have any duty to the club other than.
But now he's on. Now he's on the board.
But as a director, that's the point I was just going to make, Andy. Exactly. As a director, he absolutely has a duty.
And he's derelict in it currently. He's abdicating responsibility.
Well, I would argue that's been the case for many, many years. But yeah, but it's different as a director as against the shareholder. So try and keep the positive theme of the evening as we draw to a close.
Good hope.
There is a way out of this, but it requires, as I say, adults to come together, form a plan, explain to the people who are expecting to be paid or are wanting now to take the club into administration, to explain to those people why now is not the right time to do it, why in 6 months' time we'll be in a better position to satisfy their needs and satisfy the needs of the club and the fans. And give us that breathing space.
Fingers crossed,
yeah.
That's
my fingers are getting arthritic.
To me, that's the only solution, because you know 777 aren't the solution.
No. Not when you keep reading everything that we keep reading about them. I'm not qualified to comment, but everything I read about them, it just seems like the sword of Damocles hanging over us.
There's only two people, it seems to be there's only two people in the world that believe that they are the solution, and that's Fahd Mashiri and Josh Wander, which is very unfortunate for us because they're the only two people who can determine the outcome.
Right. Oh dear.
But apart from the Premier League saying that they're not fit and proper.
Is there a deadline on the Premier League making that decision?
No. So if you bear in mind that, so when was the deal announced? The deal was announced on the 15th of September.
Yeah.
So we're now 3 months in. And at the time they said that the deal should be, well, they said the final quarter of 2023, which is obviously where we are, and it was sort of suggested it was 10 to 12 weeks. Well, we're at the far end of that now, and what is today's date? The 16th. You know, we've got a week of the business year left, because nothing gets done between Christmas and New Year, obviously.
No.
Is it going to happen? It's not. Is it? They're not going to get approval next week.
Can't see right. It.
So we're into January, which is obviously longer than they thought. And, you know, I just end up repeating myself if we start looking at January again.
Now let's look at January when it gets here.
Yeah. Let's deal with December for now. And
you stride over the corpses of Fulham, Spurs, Manchester City, and anybody else who dares to tip up.
Yeah,
exactly.
Fulham, you have been warned.
I need to make a phone call before the day finishes to a friend of mine who said Everton won't win a single game in December. Well, he was right. We haven't won a single game. Yeah.
I think if you go back through the archives, I said we'd get 12 points. But then I always do, so it don't count.
All right, guys, should we leave it there?
See you Wednesday night.
Gosh, yeah, we're going to do another Talking the Blues before Christmas, aren't we?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Good news.
While downstairs, the final of Strictly Come Dancing is going on.
And you've forsaken it, George, to speak to us and to speak.
I hate Strictly Come Dancing.
It's not because you've not been invited on it.
I'm not going to go there with you, Andy.
I heard that you were a bit of a dancer, actually, George.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You certainly didn't hear that from me, pal.
Well, Andy's excuse is his knees.
Mine's, well, let's not go there.
My excuse would be two left feet.
Well, why weren't you covering for Mikulenko today then?
Yeah, he used to be a number three.
All right, enough of all this fun and frivolity. Let's leave it there. We will speak after the Fulham game, and it'll be five games on the run, victories. And Jordan will have extended his clean sheet run.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. And again, apologies that it's been a few weeks since we last did one, but we've done it now.
Cheers, Paul.
Cheers, guys. Cool.
Bye, Dan.